Welcome to the Floor Academy podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, owner of Illustrious Hardwoods in the ever getting hotter Mesa, Arizona. With me this week is Matt Baer, owner of Elite Flooring Installations in Louisville, Kentucky. I probably can't say that like a native. Maybe one day I can. Ooh, little feedback there. That's on me. We'll fix that. All right. So what are we going to be talking about this week? Well, I had an interesting conversation with Matt. We connected, started going back and forth. He mentioned that he is in active recovery, and we were talking about his business, and I started kind of putting some ideas together about this, and it seems to me, and we're going to have this discussion, that there's actually some really great resources that come out of being in recovery and learning how to process emotions, feelings, what's going on, how to deal with stressful situations, and being able to take those and apply them to your business to help make it more successful. And now that he's in a much better place than he was a decade ago, and we're going to learn a little bit about that, he's now taking the things he's learned and helping apply them to the subcontractors that he uses to help them get a step up. And not all of them are squeaky clean. They have a checkered past like himself. And so it appears to me, as the title of this episode is, that there's business resources through recovery. And I think it's going to be a great conversation to help you maybe apply some great concepts to your business, but also, look, there's amazing potential for pools of talent that often go neglected. We all know that there's a lot of people that work in the industry that, you know, look, are they addicts or, you know, delinquents or convicts, things like that? Sure, they exist, and a lot of people are going to write them off. But what if you learned how to interview and find people that truly wanted to change their lives around? And then what could you help them accomplish through a positive environment? And I think that's going to be a great part of today's discussion. Before we let Matt introduce himself, I want to let you know why Floor Academy is here, what we do. You know, this is your place for weekly business topics to help you go from owning a job to owning an asset to being able to take the little steps required to improve your business 5, 10, 15 minutes, an hour at a time, week over week, so that you can start having an easier go, free up that time, spend more time with your family, be able to take a step back, take a vacation, and it can continue to run itself. So by tuning in weekly, that's what you're helping to have accomplished when you put in the work. I love to tell everyone to learn while they earn. If you can listen to this while you're out installing, that's going to be a big help. Make sure you subscribe, check out the YouTube, leave a review. That helps me way more than a lot of other things. Please leave a review. And yeah, I think that's going to do it for my mouthful. So Matt, who are you? What do you do? Why do you do it? And welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. My name's Matt. I have a flooring business out of Louisville, Kentucky. I'm getting ready to transfer at least the P.O. box to Indiana, where I just moved. But I got in the flooring industry back in 2010. And, you know, this is kind of how I got my start. I was in a halfway house in Louisville. That halfway house actually had a contract with the flooring store. And anyone that went through that halfway house was guaranteed a job at that store. And they taught you a trade. And every single person in a house, and there was between 20 and 25 people there, went to work every day doing flooring. And I'll never forget my first time ever having anything to do with flooring. I was a third man, and I had a ride in the back of the van, about an hour trip up north, and we tore out carpet that was just covered in piss and animal and I had to walk it about 100 yards to the dumpster in the rain. And by the time I was done, I was just covered. It was terrible. And I think I started off at $7.25 an hour. I might have made 40 bucks that day after taxes. But it gave me a purpose. It was teaching me something. And within 9 months, I had my own little van, and I was an hourly installer for the store, making $9.50 an hour. And it's just kind of flourished. And now I run a decent size operations with a decent amount of guys, and we do a lot of work every week. somewhere between 20,000 to 30,000 foot a week. And we just, and 75% of the guys that work for me are in some sort of recovery. Mm-hmm. And I've built a pretty big operation with those guys. And someone gave me a chance back then, and I'm giving these guys a chance and helping them succeed without bumping their head as many times as I did along the path. So that's pretty much a rundown of where I came from, what I do, and where I'm at now.
Awesome. I appreciate it. So did the store owners at the time have any kind of recovery history, or were they just kind of business savvy enough to be like, look, here's a bunch of people that are going to need help. Let's go see how it goes.
The owner of the store was actually in recovery himself and had a good friend that had some halfway houses. And I think there's about three total halfway houses that the other guy owned. And they just, the store needed workers. And mm-hmm. there's a, I mean, the amount of people that go through recovery every year, the numbers are astounding. And it was a great influx of people every week, every month, every year. Some made it, some didn't, but they taught a lot of people a trade. And in Louisville, there's a lot of people that are in recovery that do flooring, and it's because of that. And they've made great lives and careers out of it. When once he stopped looking at it as just a job from 8 to 5, 9 to 5, whatever it was, and you look at it into a career, your mindset kind of changes, and you really start doing a little bit more, taking pride in your work. And me and a lot of my friends have made a very good life out of doing that.
No, that's awesome. I think that was very smart of them to realize that years and years ago, but then to be able to invest back into other people, which you're now doing the same thing, which is absolutely awesome. So can you tell me a little bit about where were you? You know, this was back in 2010. So before 2010, kind of what's the story? You know, how'd you kind of get to this is rock bottom and I have to change?
I mean, I started dabbling with drugs and alcohol at a really young age. I mean, in high school, and my parents did everything they could. I wasn't, you know, I grew up in a great home. Dad was pretty successful. My mom's a stay-at-home mom, had a younger brother and sister. You know, I had everything I ever wanted. And I just got into drugs really bad, and it continued for years and years and years. I'm originally from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I went to rehab in Florida for the first time. I'm going to skip that story, how I got to Kentucky, but I ended up in Kentucky, and you know, it didn't stop there. I was trying to move around the country to, you know, geographical change, but everywhere I went, I still brought myself and my same thoughts and everything like that. And I continued going in and out. I mean, back in 2010, that wasn't my first time trying to get sober, and it wasn't my last. I didn't get officially sober until about 4.5 years ago. And when I did, you know, I literally had nothing, essentially homeless, negative bank accounts, didn't have a vehicle, didn't know what I was going to do, but I just had enough. And I finally went to detox again, probably 10th, 15th time. And I just, something clicked, and I stopped being the selfish person that I was. And I asked for help, and I really did work the steps, and I went to the programs, and I did what they told me to do. And today, as I sit, I was talking to someone at dinner last time. You couldn't give me $1 million right now to put a drink or a drug in me. Not a chance. My life is way too good, and there's too many people that depend on me to ever even consider doing something like that again.
That's awesome to hear, man. And you got a couple little kids.
Yeah, I got two.
And like, yeah.
Yeah. Two kids up there taking a nap with my wife right now. Just built a beautiful house up in Indiana. You know, sometimes I look at how far I've come, and it's just kind of crazy, but I still have a long way to go. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. stopping. I started using some of the money I'm making now to invest in my future with real estate. Because I want to have some sort of retirement. That's where you see a lot of flooring people that work to the day they die because they don't have anything for retirement. And I don't want to be one of those guys. I really don't. So, I mean, sometimes you have to make your own retirement. And that's what definitely. I'm trying.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great move, is to find a way to, you know, this industry can be really lucrative. It bothers me when I see guys saying that there's guys or gals saying there's no money in it. You can't do anything. It sucks. And man, there's tons of opportunities when you grab the bull by the horns and you take advantage of what is out there. So it's great to hear that you're doing well. And, you know, you came from a really bad spot and you've been able to flip everything 180 degrees, go a total different direction. And now you're looking like, how do I build an investment portfolio? How do I buy real estate? How do I do something to move myself forward and build a legacy for my family, which is a great, great thing to be looking at. And I think that's what's definitely helping is that, you know, obviously that mindset flip happened for you. And so you started taking it seriously. You said to yourself, you know, I can't be selfish anymore. I have to put other people first. And it looks like that's what's truly, truly happening.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I learn a lot from the people around me. I surround myself with some very smart people, that have built multi-million dollar companies. And you know, I also look at the other people that are around me that, you know, who I want to be or who I don't want to be and the reasons why and how do I create my own path. I don't have a company where I'm doing a 401k match or anything like that, you know? Just piece by piece, I'm just slowly working on just not my future, but also trying to help my guys as well, whatever it may be. I spend hours a week on job sites with them, trying to mentor them to not make some of the same mistakes that I did. That store that I worked for eventually moved from hourly to subcontracting, and that was a huge – what we thought was this awesome because we got these big checks and they helped us buy the vans. You know, everything I was in – every van that we drove, they financed them for us through the truck, through our – they took it out of our paychecks, and they got us set up on insurance and stuff like that. But – none of us really realized, we all knew that we should probably pay taxes on it, but no one realized how important it was back then. You got to think, we were a bunch of drug addicts and alcoholics. So when you start getting some of these bigger checks and not taxes taken out and stuff like that, you know, that's when people start living outside their means. And I did the same thing. And next thing you know, you're 3-4 years in, you haven't paid any taxes. You know, it put a lot of people in some really bad spots. And it took me some years to get out of that.
I believe
go ahead.
I believe it, man. I've been there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I finally sat down with an accountant some years later and got all my back taxes taken care of. And, you know, that's one thing I try to teach, not just my guys or anyone that asks, that taxes are so important. They're crucial. A lot of people like me that came up doing drugs and drinking alcohol, everyone thinks that cash is king. In the real world, cash means absolutely nothing. It really doesn't. It's your credit score and what you file in taxes is what makes you the opportunities of this life open up more. And, you know, it's a hard pill for people to swallow. And like I said, a lot of people live outside their means. They got beautiful boats and, you know, motorcycles and all these great tools, these great toys, but they haven't paid taxes. Mm-hmm. And a couple guys that, you know, they can't even renew their insurance because they're auditing what they did before and they never paid their taxes. Now these guys have nothing, nowhere to go and can't even work. And, you know, I have an option for some guys if they want to be put on a book so they can, but their money will just be garnished. So that's how you dig yourself a hole that's so deep it's hard to get out of. And thankfully I didn't get that far, but there's a lot of people in the industry that do get that far.
That there is. There's a lot of cash in this industry that gets tossed around for exactly those reasons of, I don't want to pay child support, pay me under the table and do this, that, you know, I need to go. That, look, there's tons of bad stuff going on. And look, everyone's heard me talk about it before. I think subcontracting is one of the worst things that ever happened to this industry. I think people need to be running employees. I think we need to have control. I think we need to help educate and mentor people to be successful because most people shouldn't be running a business or responsible for their own finances, sadly. And so it's not a good system. And it's, you know, I think the store looked to get all the business benefits out of it. And they threw you all under the bus as, you know, oh, it's better. Well, for some, it probably was, but for most, it definitely wasn't as you're telling the story here. So, You you're able to get in the store, you learned a skill, you then fell in love with the skill, started taking pride in it. And then it said you had said that you didn't really get fully sober until like 4 years ago. So there's a gap in time here, but what did this journey start looking like as the store kind of put you out on your own, you're your own business now, and you're not fully sober, but you're getting it together and learning and going through recovery motions. What are the steps that really started helping you figure out that these running a business and recovery kind of go hand in hand? They're very similar to each other.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially what I got sick of seeing everyone that I went to high school with or other people I met in the recovery community that to continue to exceed in life. And I was just left behind because of what I kept on doing. And I just got sick of just living like it. You're not even, when you're in active addiction, you are not living, you are existing from day to day, and you have one mission. That's it. And that's to get high or drunk. And, you know, some of those problems that I created for myself, and when I got sober, the first day I got out of detox, I had to go ahead and I turned myself into the police department. So there were some things that I did, and thankfully they did not arrest me. But coming back to the problems that I created, I was able to get through after I got sober. I had a men's list that was very long, and you know, some awkward things had to happen. I had to apologize and make financial amends to a lot of people, including the IRS. But to fast forward, when I got sober, you know, I've learned how to deal with a lot of problems, a lot of stress, and how to hit those problems head on. Every day is not great, sober or in business. And I've learned to use, you know, some of the past stuff that I've done in the situations that I put myself in and got myself out of, how to deal with people. I've learned how to deal with people. I'm pretty good when it comes to dealing with people. And a lot of that has to deal with the people I've met throughout the years in and outside of jails, prisons. I mean, the list goes on, and rehabs. You know, every day when I wake up, there's a new problem every morning. And that's what I'm a problem solver, essentially, with all the guys. And they call me the problems. And I've learned how to deal with them better than a lot of other people. And it's been to great success. And I also teach people how to analyze the problems. A lot of people want to deal with a problem, and they flip out and they yell and they deal with this. And it's just, you don't get anything done. You get absolutely nothing accomplished that way, and you create enemies. So just between all that, I mean, I've just learned how to deal with people better and how to handle situations that most people, at least drug addicts and alcoholics, used to flip out about. We, you know, learn to talk it through, and there's a solution on the other side one way or another.
I think you knocked it out the park when you said that you're a problem solver. I've had that discussion before, and it's amazing that we don't realize how simple business is. Mm-hmm. Right. So we go into business and we think, oh, I'm a flooring installer. So I install flooring. No. That's what I do. Well, no, Mrs. Jones doesn't like the tile and she wants LVP now. She has a problem. I'm solving the problem, right? And then you go to demo and there's something that's in the way and needs to be worked around. Well, that's a problem. You solve it. And you nailed it, because people get so bent out of shape that, oh, it's going unexpected again. The wrench got thrown in the gears, and now what do we do? Shut up. Don't get upset. And I'm working on this and learning the skills still too. But now that I think, okay, I'm just a problem solver. Everything I do is about solving problems. So when something comes along that's unexpected, okay, what's the solution? Move forward. Like, why sit there and debate it for 30 minutes or an hour and struggle with it and get mad? And great, now I lost an hour. I could have made the decision 2 minutes and been working on it for 58.
Absolutely. And 90% of those come with a change order, which means more money. You know, You're exactly right. That's what a lot of people don't realize is I'd say about 95% of our work is new construction. And, you know, it has, if all we had to do was go in there and lay the floor, it would be simple, but it's never that simple. We work around other trades and the electricians, the painters, they're pouring a driveway right now. So how can we make it work? We can make it work. The last thing you want to do is pack your tools up and go home because no one makes any money then. Mm-hmm. That, you know, blowouts are not good. So let's find a way to do it because that's one thing we can't get back in life is time. So let's see how we can work something out. I mean, I've gone in dumpsters before to get sheets of old plywood to put to go through the grass so we can get inside the house through a window to get the floor laid because they're pouring concrete. And concrete guys will always trump floor guys because they have a limited window to do some things. But we got the job done. And we're able to get paid that day, and we have a new job tomorrow. Instead of wasting an entire day and then going to do the same job again tomorrow, you know, you just cut your profit in half. Now, yeah. Probably less after you factor in gas money and whatever else you got going on. But, yeah, I've learned. So I used to be bad at getting real frustrated and, you know, flipping out essentially. And I've learned that it makes everything 100 times worse. When you talk to people just the respectful way that you would want to be talked to and learn how to solve problems, things, your life is so much better to the point where they want us on a job site because they're going to figure out how to get it done. And they're respectful to talk to. They're nice. They treat everyone well. And those type of things what continue to get you more work. They don't want the crew that just flipped out over them because the electricians laid a bunch of wires on the floor. We all know electricians don't clean up after themselves. It's just part of it. So mm-hmm. Sweep it to another room and continue on. There's no point of flipping out about that. I try not to sweat the small things, and those are the small mm-hmm. things in mine. Definitely. Those are the small.
And so how did, you know, these are things that are generally learned with time, but how mm-hmm. Where did that come from in recovery? Like what was is there a step? Is there like I can't think of it, not mentor, your sponsor, right? Did these come through conversations with them of them saying like, these are things that need to happen? Or was this really just a realization as you grew through, you know, having to have the talks about what's going on in life that you started to see this as, I just need to come to this realization that solving problems is way easier than getting upset.
I think my sponsor definitely paved the path for me to walk down, but it was on me to grow myself and also through business. You know, I've learned what happens when you yell at people. A couple things happen when you yell. For one, there's you can't treat every person the same. You know, there's some people you yell at, you can get hit in the face. There's some people that you yell at, they're going to cry and never come back again. So I have learned that, you know, talk to everyone. I mean, that's a great question, but I think a lot of it just comes down to growing up as a human to yourself and see what happens when you don't treat people the way they should be treated. Whether right or wrong, it really doesn't matter, but we're all here now. I've prayed for patience to be able to deal with some problems. Some problems mm-hmm. I don't think should ever happen, but it doesn't matter. If we didn't deal with problems, I mean, I wouldn't be sitting where I'm sitting.
Yeah,
I've learned be great at solving the problems and getting guys to work and doing a great job. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's about quality. And when they're successful, I'm more successful. So how do we get there? By being respectful, doing what we say we're going to do to the best of our ability. And we call with problems and we solve problems and we make everyone aware of it.
It's so simple when it's laid out right like that, right? But I think that's, you're looking out for people. You're putting people first. And it's not that the business doesn't matter. It's not that making sure the floor goes in doesn't matter. But a lot of businesses these days, I think, struggle with having a healthy culture to where people are put first. And all these conversations I'm having keep kind of coming full circle. The last week's episode, we started talking about assertiveness and how people think assertiveness is yelling and screaming and like getting in someone's face. And that's not it at all. There's this thing like quiet assertiveness to where you can be respectful, but make your point and be very clear in it. And I think that's what we're talking about here, but you're also investing in people and trying to give them a future which promotes a healthier work environment and a better company culture to where people are like, oh, hey, you know, Matt runs a great company. We should go. You want to come work for him. You know, it's better than the other places in town. And
yeah,
I wonder, like, how much of that comes from, I'm sorry, I let me get it out. How much of that comes from you were invested in and you, that's what you made, like, that's what helps you realize your life was changing because someone actually invested in you as opposed to wrote you off. I don't, and if that's not true, tell me, but I think that might be what's happening.
You know, I feel that, you know, the more time you spend with people that are working for you, with you, however you want to put it, and the more respectful that you are to them, the happier they are, the better work that they do, and everyone could just win together. It just makes it that much easier. You know, it's a great point. I think a lot of it just takes time of growing up, and, you know, I can't tell you how many people I see just the yelling and the screaming, and it nothing good happens from it. I mean, I personally think the easiest part of flooring is putting the floor down. Okay. I think all the other things that go before the flooring and after the flooring are the most important parts of the job. Your appearance, show up on time, proper subfloor work, whatever that may be, grind and what floor prep, whatever it is, communication, laying the floor, cleaning up. We leave the job better than when we got there. Mm-hmm. Do we clean up other people's stuff? Every day, you know? And this respecting the builders and the homeowners and stuff, and, you know, it's just worked out very well for me and all my guys.
What does that do for them, though? Because I think, once again, okay, negative connotations exist as, oh, you're an addict, so, like, I'm not going to treat you with respect, or you're less than me because you're this degenerate within society. And so you're teaching these guys that they need to be respectful of everyone. And how much do the builders or the homeowners, like, come in and look at this and just be like, wait, this blows my perception of what should be existing. And then they come around to it and they show way more gratitude and respect to the crews or yourself.
Absolutely. People want to feel wanted, right? People want to feel like they did a good job. I've learned from stores that I work with or even just throughout life that people that feel accepted and appreciated do better work. They feel better about themselves and they do better quality work. And when they see that, I make sure I tell my guys at least once or twice a week, I should probably do it more, how great of a job they do. You know, because the only thing we really hear about is like that one callback. You can do 100 great jobs, but they still remember that one callback from 9 months ago. So, and, you know, again, it goes back to happier people do better work and they continue to come to work and stay at work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just better for everyone.
Well, okay, so you're talking about guys getting hung up on something that you know, they remember the callback from 9 months ago, right? That's got to be kind of similar to being in recovery, right? Like, you remember the mistakes and they bother the hell out of you and whatnot. So what kind of tools do you have or does, you know, whatever program you're working have to kind of help with that mindset of letting it go and moving on from it so that you can actually move forward and not be so hung up?
You know, I don't necessarily know that there's a step you can put on or anything like that, but it comes down to, you know, a lot of us are very prideful people. At least my guys, we want to do great work. And when we get a call back, we're not happy about it. And we're not some of the guys that been laying flooring for 10 years and laid a million feet that's never had a call back. We get them. It's just part of it. But we've learned what I've learned. And what they've learned is we call them punch lists so much more now than callbacks, because callbacks, it's kind of a bad word for someone. Mm-hmm. But we learn from it. So the biggest thing, you know, that we learn in recovery is we learn from our mistakes so we don't make them in the future. So let's learn what we did to get that callback or that punch list so we don't do them in the future, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing to take out of is how you learn from what you did in the past so you don't repeat it in the future.
It's such a mature attitude, right? To look at it as a learning experience, as a growth opportunity, as opposed to, this is a pain point. This is a frustration point. I'm going to get upset about it. This is an annoyance. Okay, let's go find out why it's screwed up so that we can learn to correct it and not have it happen again in the future. It's just such a refreshing attitude and way to look at things. It's just not the norm of what you would see happen within this industry. But these are the things that I love learning and sharing through this podcast is like, look, this one little change can affect so much more of your business for years and years to come.
Yeah. The store that we pull a lot of work out of, they've got, you know, guys that go behind us and fix callbacks. And I really wanted to put a stop to that because if they're fixing stuff that we're doing wrong, we're not learning from it. And we want to try to be the best. And if we don't know we're making mistakes, we're not going to fix anything. So we do pull from a store and I've learned to grow a relationship with this store. That's been great, beneficial for not only me and my guys, but for the store. I mean, the store's grown and we've grown and we've grown together and we work together very, very well. And, you know, they all know my history and majority of my guys' history and no one cares. No one cares. We all have the same goal is to go to work, do good work and get paid. That's it.
I think that's awesome. All right, folks, I hope this is still working. I apologize if it's not. So it looks like it is. I have an error on my side. So we'll find out if this is recorded in the future, man. This is going to be exciting.
Yeah.
And we may be able to do it again. I've had to do that a couple times. Not that I'm proud to admit it. Things happen. I'm sorry. I'm gonna interrupt us. We're at that point. So a couple words from some sponsors, and then we'll get back into it. Go Board is engineered for durability, yet up to 80% lighter than cement boards. Easy to cut and handle. It can be cut on site, right where it's installed, using a basic utility knife without crumbling or disintegrating. Best of all, the waterproofing is built in. Go Board half inch thick, 48x64 panels are now available. Ask your supplier to bring them in for you. Visit www.jm.com/goboard for more information. Introducing the ultimate solution for flooring contractors, a cloud-based virtual estimating software. Get accurate and detailed estimates in minutes without ever leaving the job site or even the office. With features like real-time collaboration, project management tools, and automatic material calculations, you'll have the information you need to close deals faster and more efficiently than ever before. Try it today and experience the future of flooring estimating. Check out the link in the show notes to demo the program or visit estimates.flooracademypod.com. All right, Matt. So, you went out on your own and you have crews now.
Yeah.
And you're investing in them, but what did that journey look like to even kind of get there, right? Did it start with you having apprentices and then you grew them and put them out on their own, or did you just start finding other guys that were doing it and hiring them on saying, "Look, I got you. Here's some work," or what the development from man in a van to what you have going on now look like?
So, I mean, essentially just started with, you know, I got sober again and I reached out to a halfway house and asked for if anyone came in that needed a job. And they said, yeah, we got this guy and blah, blah, blah. And I picked him up the next day and we started all over again. And that was my start this last time. And slowly, you know, I worked for a different store. We just did our thing. And I, And the money was great. We were doing fine. I didn't like to work because a lot of apartment turn work wasn't big on it. It was more production, less quality, lower pay. Nothing mm-hmm. wrong with it. It's just not where I wanted to be. I wanted to do more. And I knew that I could only grow so much there. And so essentially, you know, I started calling around, actually found the store that I work for now. And I called the owner multiple times because I worked for him years ago. And I started getting high again is what happened. And I bagged him and I bagged him and I bagged him. And he finally gave me another chance. And I went from having five jobs, six jobs a week at the other store, one every day, maybe two, to that store. I started off, they said, you can have two jobs the first week. And I said, oh, man, dude, what am I supposed to do with two jobs? And I mean, nothing big, like 800 foot. Mm-hmm. So that 800 foot twice. We did two 800 foot jobs, 1600 foot that week or so. And they started to trust me again. I had to earn their trust back. And I did. And I did it by getting up every day, doing good work, calling when there's problems, problem solving, and doing everything they wanted me to do. And I slowly got into more and more work. And then I kept on calling again the owners. Hey, I see you guys got a lot of new construction apartments going on. I'd like to have a piece of that. And we finally got some. And now we do a ton of new construction apartments. But through those years, I slowly started gaining more and more crews as because at the end of the day, this store, with a lot of stores, it's a lot easier for them to give three people 30 jobs a week than it is to give out 30 jobs to 30 different crews. Yeah. So that's essentially how that store is ran. And it's a lot easier for them to give the work to me and two other guys and us deal with all the work. And I slowly started adding more and more and more people to my sub list. And I had some hourly guys for a while, but they didn't, you know, when you grow, things change. And if they're not a part of that change or conducive to the environment, then, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. And I had to move on for some people. And some people told me I should have moved on for them years ago. And it not every decision that you make is an easy one, but it's for the better of you. I mean, the owner of this company I talked to at least a couple times a month, and he says the same thing. You know, you're going to continue to grow and we're going to continue to grow. There's going to be some people that aren't going to be able to grow with you. You got to come up with a plan and stick to that plan, how you're going to get there no matter what. And that's what I do. And, you know, it's been pretty good since then. Now, if you see a new construction apartment complex go up within about 100-mile radius, there's a 95% chance we're the ones doing it. Mm-hmm. And not only do I make a great living, so do all my guys. I mean, I don't know if you want to get in the numbers, but I mean, payroll is around 20 grand a week. So we do a decent amount of flooring and everyone's happy. And, you know, it's just kind of how we grew over the last few years.
No, very cool. So what does it look like? Because obviously, okay, you had gone back into addiction and this store owner at the time was like, you know, I don't know. And you had to like beg him for work, right? But you're actively hiring recovering addicts, and once again, you know, I want to talk about the benefits. So what were the lessons learned? Because I'm sure a couple of them have gone off the rails on you and led to some difficult situations of not showing up or hopefully no one stealing, but you know, that's a probability of something mm-hmm. to happen. So what is it sounds like the first time you called the halfway house and you got this first guy, you were just kind of like, well, let's take them. Like, here we go. Is there something a little more set up and solidified now in place to be able to go and acquire an employee or a new sub and like an interview process or a vetting process to make sure that this is going to be a good fit?
I mean, essentially we have a buddy of mine that I have another business with. One of our good friends is, he's a counselor I don't want to say their name, but at mm-hmm. a local rehab where, you know, you go there for 60 or 90 days and the last 30 days you're able to go to work. Okay. And we hire those guys for flooring or for the real estate stuff that we do. And there's a high turnover. You know, there really is. I also think though, almost any business nowadays has a decent turnover, just because it almost seems like a lot of people don't want to work. But when you find those couple good ones that came out of the recovery houses, or the rehabs, or the detox, you know it, and they do great work. Mm-hmm. They show up every day. They have pride in what they do, and the biggest thing is they see where I came from, because I let them know. The biggest way I can relate with someone is to let them know I was in your place not too long ago and where I'm at now, and that gives them some hope. And hope is a real powerful thing for people that are in a really bad spot at the time. Because at the end of the day, this is America, and we can build whatever we want to with our lives. It's never too late. It's really not. And I've seen, you know, like the one guy I picked up, he doesn't work for me anymore, but he's been sober since the day I picked him up. And he's doing other things, and we keep in contact, and you know that gives me hope and pride and helps me stay sober. Be honest with you, when I see these guys that have nothing coming out of detox, that helps me not forget where I came from. The biggest thing I can do is forget where I came from, because we have a different mind. So essentially, when I think about my past, I think about the good times I used to have getting high or drinking. That's probably 20 some years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember 5 years ago when I was homeless with nothing. You know, minds are a funny thing, but that's why I continue to go to some meetings and help people out coming in, because not just helps them, it helps me. It probably helps me more than it helps them, but we help each other. And yeah, at the end of the day, we all win then.
Well, it's everybody giving each other a hand up instead of a hand out, which is awesome. It also sounds like you're not taking just anybody. You have somebody that's sort of vetting them and handing you the better candidates, that are people that are more likely to be successful. So someone else is kind of doing the interviewing for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy to tell people that are serious. I mean, you know, I've been the guy in detox that was there because my PO told me, or my parents made me, or, you know, you can tell someone's mindset where they're just, they're killing time, somewhere to go. Some people just need somewhere to go because it's cold. They want to, you know, 60 days with hot meals and a bed and a shower to take in. And I get it. I've been there, but those aren't the people for me. I want the guys that want something more in life, and I can help and get it, and we can get it together. Mm-hmm.
Once again, investing in people is going to make the difference. Actually caring and truly finding out what they want. Like you said, their success motivates you to keep it together, because that's what's your success is what's being able to provide them the opportunity. And so how much does that motivate you now to stay away from everything? Like you said, you remember it's weird how minds work, in that no matter how bad life was as an addict, you can remember what it feels like to have been in that situation and high, and that the good feeling, right? You don't remember how miserable you were coming down or without it, or the damage you caused. You can remember that moment, and that's what you're after, because you're like, oh, that was so much easier to feel good. But how much better does it feel now to say, I've been able to help these people stand on their own 2 feet, get an apartment, buy a car, pay taxes, have lives, build families? Like, is that the better high now? And that's what you're after? Like, have you traded one addiction for a healthier addiction?
I don't know if you want to call it trading one addiction for another. That's probably a whole topic we could probably spend hours on. But I think that, you know, they absolutely helped me to stay sober. But I mean, so essentially, you couldn't pay me $1 million right now to get high or drunk. You literally couldn't, because my life is too good. And you help people get to where they're at in life from where they started, that is definitely a great feeling. You know, you watch them get their kids back in their lives and have buying their first vehicle, or being able to rent their first apartment, because they couldn't do any of that before. You know, let them know what a credit score is. The a lot of things that should probably be taught in high school, mm-hmm, they aren't. And then you go through 5 or 10 years of addiction. Next thing you know, you're 25, 30 years old with a 400 credit score, never filed taxes in your life, and you're coming into this world blindsided. And essentially what happened to me, and, you know, I've helped people learn what credit is, where to go get a second chance bank account, because after you screw so many over, they don't want anything to do with you. But there are things out there to help people, and you know they were there for me, and you know, just a hand up in life can do a lot for it, really can. And this addiction to disease is not going anywhere. So why not continue trying to help people? We can grow together than just write them off, because that was the biggest thing when I was going into that treatment center doing flooring for $7.25. A lot of us have criminal backgrounds that we can't get a normal job. Now, back then and now, times are a little bit different. They're more, you know, they're more lenient to hire you depending on what you've done. Mm-hmm. But why not teach them a trade they can go anywhere essentially in this country or the world and to be able to and make a decent living and make a great living if you really want to. I know a lot of guys that just want to do a backsplash a day and they want to go home. They want to work a couple hours a day, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that either. I prefer to try and build as big as I can, help as many people as I can, all of us be successful together. I have a different mindset than a lot of other people. Nothing's right or wrong. Some of the guys that work for me, they just like me to tell them where to be, what to do, and that's it. And they live a very simple life. I live a more stressful, chaotic life, and I do a lot more behind the scenes than people think that I do. The work doesn't just fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
I go out there and get it, and I pre-check jobs, and I check them when they're done. I deal with salespeople. I deal with the builders. I deal with a lot, and that's what I enjoy doing. I really enjoy everything that I do on a daily basis. Now, I wouldn't say that I love my job so much I don't work a day in my life. No. I mean, some days really do suck, but that's just a part of life. Whether you're an alcoholic or not, days are going to suck. That's just part of it. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's work-related problems, family problems with the family, your car broke down, whatever it may be, you know, it's a part of life. And when you start being able to deal with those problems as an adult, you know, life just gets easier. I can't – there's only two things in this world that I can control, what I say and what I do. That's it. Whatever people do, whatever people say, things that happen, can't control it. Once I've accepted that fact, my life has gotten much less stressful. It really has. Mm.
Great point. You got to accept that you can only control a couple of things in life. I love that. You were talking about that, you know, your guys have the opportunity. They're learning a trade. There's as you know, a convict, an addict, you know, checkered past, whatever you want to have it be here. There's opportunities in trades to be able to go and do things. And it's funny because it once again, to bring up last week's episode, we were talking and they do a lot of like sheet vinyl work and stuff in the commercial flooring world, but they do it for like hospitals. And so there's background checks and all these things in place to where like you have to be squeaky clean because it's a children's hospital to go even do the work in it. And it's a stark difference of like, it seems to be there's kind of two sides to the industry, but I don't know that I want to even consider that. It's that there's different opportunities available no matter who you are, the path you've chosen, and you can do well in both of them. Like just because you have a different background and past. I mean, I'm a felon for possession and intent to distribute with marijuana. Does that make me a horrible person? Probably not, but you know, at the time, yeah, I made some poor decisions and I've grown and matured from there and tried to learn how to run a business, invest back in my community and the children in it. And, you know, they let me be my son's Cub Scout leader. And, you know, you got to mark that box of like, yes, I have a felony in here. Let's talk about it and do all this stuff. And at this point, it's such a changing point and it was a growth opportunity for me that I don't regret it at all. I look upon it fondly. In fact, it's really one of the things that I can look at and be like, huh, I was always kind of an entrepreneur. I just didn't know it. No one was there to like mentor the skills in a positive way. So I found my own quick negative ways to build it. And I'm wondering how much of that kind of plays into your journey here of you finding yourself and being able to build this. Like, are there plans for Matt to open your own halfway house, or is there some kind of a recovery program that you want to build to give back to the community or anything?
It's funny. Funny you say that. I mean, that was actually me and my other business partner were actually talking about that last week. There is why not do it? You know, why not? I think without talking too much about it on mm-hmm. here, that definitely a great possibility for that to happen within the next quarter or two. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say I do everything just to help people. No, I do it also to make money. I got to make a living, right? Mm-hmm. I got a family to stuff like that. So, and that's probably what a good chance that that's going to happen, you know? But like you're saying, you know, my past defines who I am. I would not trade anything I did or change anything I did, because I would not be sitting here the person I am today, being able to do what I do without going through the past that I had. I am perfectly okay with who I am today and what I do. People love a good comeback story. They really do. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be those few people out there that aren't happy for you, or, you know, it is what it is. I don't even stress about things like that anymore. It's not worth it. You know, I'm happy and content with where I'm at, and I'm going to keep on moving forward to grow as much as I can, not just for me, but for also my guys, and whatever may happen will happen.
Yeah, no, look, and I agree. There's nothing wrong with making money. I think it's where the intentions come from. Money can be a byproduct of having pure intentions of wanting to help people. And it takes money to help people. Can you help people without money? Yes, you can go do very, very nice things for them. But with money, you can help push your cause forward in other ways. And so it when it becomes only about the money, that's a problem. And I don't see that from you. I'm not getting that in this conversation, that it's I need to build all these things just so I can continue to advance myself forward. It's I truly and genuinely want to invest in people and give them opportunities that I was given, but it takes me being able to fund that in a way so I can continue to present them.
Absolutely. There's nothing free in this world. It's one of the biggest lessons my dad taught me. There's absolutely nothing free in this world. Everything comes with some sort of price, whether you see it on a front end or a back end. There's a price there, you know. But, you know, I opened up my notebook and it says thought, decision, action, results. And that's just about anything. You want to do something different. It comes with a thought, right? You want to do something different. Then you make the decision to move forward to doing that. Then you put some action behind that decision, and that's how you get some results. You know, you can think to want to do better forever. It doesn't matter. Action and action is what gives you the results that people want. You know, nothing is given to you in life, and if you want something, you're going to have to go out and get it. And I'm going to continue to go out to get it, and I'm sure a majority of the people that are around me do too. I've learned to surround myself with people more successful than I am, because it makes me want to do more. Mm-hmm. And it's been powerful. I learned from them, and I passed everyone that's around me.
Yeah, and that's it, right? You gotta. So many people you're right. Thought, decision, action, result, and most people get hung up on the thought or the decision. Right? They may have the thought, but they can't make the decision, so there's never any action. Or they get hung up on the thought, and there's never any decision. And that's a beautiful process to just, okay, look, I had the thought, I have to make a decision, I have to put it into action, go do the work, and then there's going to be a result, positive or negative, but I can then see the result and I can reevaluate through a new decision and thought, decision, and action how to do it to go get a positive result. And then putting yourself around people that are more successful to you. When I finally did that, that's where everything that I have now in the past couple of years has come from, is I stopped being the guy that wanted to complain and play the victim and have a chip on my shoulder about everything too. There's some really smart people in this industry that, man, all I had to do was reach out and ask. It was never a question of, no, we won't help you. It was, all you had to do was call and ask for whatever it is that you wanted, right? I'm not asking for money, but if I'm asking for advice, sure. Now, what I've learned is that people will only help you if they see results. If you keep calling and bugging people and asking for help and advice and stuff, and you want them to mentor you, if you don't go do the work that they're telling you to do, then they're going to stop taking your calls because you're wasting their time, and they will go find somebody that's willing to go do the work. But there are a ton of people just waiting to help you. And if someone's not willing to help you, I think it speaks volumes about who they really are. Yeah. It may speak volumes about who you are, but most likely it's, if you're doing the work and someone's not willing to help you, it speaks volumes about who they are. And so that'll let you know real quick who you want to be around.
Yeah. I get phone calls from people all the time that they're still in the same place as they were 6 months ago because they didn't do any action to change where they're at, whether that's in business or in life when it comes to addiction. And eventually I will stop answering those phone calls because there's other people that deserve my time more, you know, and at some point I'm not going to continue to answer the phone and spend endless amount of time on there to tell them the same thing I did over and over again. And they're still in the same position or predicament that they were in, you know, whether it's fear-based or whatever it is. I mean, it's just part of it. And we're, Do I still make some stupid decisions? Absolutely. 100%. I'm not perfect by any means, but I've learned to run those the things that I'm thinking about or decision I'm thinking about making by people smarter than me before I do it. You know? So, and it's just worked out really well.
For sure. How much has the environment around you changed as we're sitting here talking about it? And you said that you've kind of moved on from some situations and people and mentors. And I think that's a big step of it, is that you can still like those people, you can have relationships with them, but ultimately, if you want to move forward, like if you're not making $1 million, go hang out with a bunch of people that are making $1 million a year. But once you get to that level, then go find the people that are making $5 million or $10 million a year and put yourself in a room, right? Like, you're going to get to where the people are that you're hanging out with because their mindsets are generally addictive. Is that what's happening with you?
100%. Without a doubt, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if I didn't. I mean, we are the people that we hang around, you know, whether it's good or bad, that's what you're going to be. So as you know, people, he got money now, he's too good for us. So whatever people say, it's not, you grow. Either you grow with people or you outgrow people, and there's nothing wrong with it. But I've surround myself now instead of drug dealers or people hanging out at the bar that got me absolutely nowhere besides in jail and piss poor decision making. Mm-hmm. Now I hang out with people that do 10 times more than I do, because I want to do 10 times more too, you know, and part of that might be the drug addict mentality that I have that. You know, that's where I got to watch. Like, what point is it too much, or is what I have not enough? Like, what am I seeking? But I have certain goals to meet, and I'm going to meet them one way or another. I might fail 4 or 5 times, but I'm going to fail at a different level than I did 5 years ago.
The only thing I would change is fail, because I don't think, as long as you're trying, I don't like the word, right? If you learned a lesson and you can apply it, it's never a failure. Failure is quitting and giving up and walking away, in my opinion. And it's not that we don't do that sometimes, or maybe we just, it's not even failing at that point. It's realizing that this is not feasible and we need to, I've lost internet. What is going on today? I'm sorry, folks. My internet is unstable and it shouldn't be. I might actually have to edit this episode. what can I? I don't know. I hope it should be recording locally. So we will. Now it's back up. All right. Maybe it's not. Oh, well. All right. Sorry, folks, that we're watching live. You can listen to this playback. We're almost at an end anyways. That's the beauty of doing these the way that I do them. So, all right, I'm sorry, man. It's such a distraction, and it kind of ruined what's going on. But yeah, I think just being able to, there's no failure, right? There's no, sometimes things have to stop, but that's the lesson learned. And so it's not a failure as long as there's a positive takeaway. And I'm not trying, I don't need to coach you. I want the audience to know, right? Like, don't look at it as failing. As long as you take something away and you don't quit before like finding the solution, then it's a positive thing to be able to move it all forward.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. Failure is a pretty strong word, but you're absolutely right. If you don't fail until you quit trying, you know, and that goes with business or addiction. You know, you can, if you're continuing trying to get sober, you didn't fail. You're still trying. You know, so, but that's a very, very valid point. It's pretty spot on.
Thanks. I try every once in a while. There's a nugget of wisdom that gets to come out of me on the show, as opposed to just the guests. So that's, you know, I'll take that one.
Thank you.
Is there anything that we didn't hit on that you think is important within this greater conversation?
I would ask that, you know, the people out there that are running crews or hiring people, don't give up on, or don't turn away from the possibility of hiring someone like me or some of my guys. I mean, I watched a Facebook live feed of another company locally that was hiring the other day, and they said no drug addicts and no people with criminal backgrounds. And what they do for a company is, I mean, it's outside, and it's I was just kind of taken back by it. And I messaged the guy and said, hey, dude, why not give them a chance, you know? And he actually agreed with me and took that down and redid the video, because you might be writing off one of the best employees you may ever have. Great just think advice. If that store that I begged to come back to, if they didn't take me back, they might be in a different place too. Mm-hmm.
Well, with what you've been able to build and help them build, right? Like, there's a partnership going on, and so they can handle more work because of what you've done. So it was a great decision, but yeah, could have gone the other way. And I had people, you know, I had to fill out applications for years, and you know, yes, I'm a felon, and what does that look like? And let's go have this conversation. And people gave me chance after chance, because ultimately what I did wasn't a big deal to most people, but some places never called me back. The places that did, I think generally would feel they got a good employee for a little bit. You know, there's other problems that I had, but work ethic has never really been my problem. So they always got good work out of me, but the attitude was another thing. So we're working on that one still, but, right on, man. I super appreciate the conversation. I think it's full of great insights, great opportunities into how you can maybe go about your business a different way. Help I'm big on wanting to help community. If we want flooring to be respected as a trade and even be in the trade discussion, because it's usually not, it's HVAC, plumbing, electrical, you know, flooring does not come up in the trades discussion usually.
Doesn't.
If we go and we actively, if we're the people investing into our community because we want to see a better community and the other trades aren't, it's going to go a long way in helping all of us move not only our businesses forwards, but our community forward in a positive direction. And don't do it just to do it. Do it because you really genuinely want to do it. Go find kids to mentor. Go find elderly people to do something for. Give a shower away or a floor away. Run a, you know, if the house burns down, be the business that steps up to be a donation center to help them. Whatever it needs to look like for you and your business, but actively get involved in your community. You know, go work with a halfway house. Do something. I don't know what it needs to look like, but I think if you go get involved with your community and you truly support them out of the kindness of your heart, then your community will then invest back into you tenfold, and you can just continue to have this awesome relationship that goes both ways. And that's what I really wanted everyone to get out of this discussion, is that don't judge a book by its cover, because you don't truly know what's there. And heck, look, take a pen to it, man. You can start crossing out pages and rewriting them, and you can have a new book in no time. So don't give up on people. All that being said, I think that'll be us wrapping it up. Thank you, Matt, for coming on, sharing your story and your thoughts on just what's going on with you within the industry and where you came from and how that can give us something different to consider. Folks, go check out FloorAcademyPod.com. We got the shop over there with awesome merchandise. You can also check out the files. So there's the business budgeting worksheet. There's a job costing worksheet. We got there's a great interview with Erin Albrecht from J&R Tile. There's a worksheet that goes along with her interview. And hopefully reach out to me if you want to try out a lead tracker. It's not up on the website yet. I'm having people test it out. Shoot me an email at FloorAcademyPodcast@gmail.com. I can email you the lead tracker. If the show's helping you, if it's making a difference in your life and your business, go to patreon.com/FloorAcademy. Even $5 a month goes a long way in helping the show to continue. And I'll thank you to the sponsors. They do a lot to help keep the lights on around here. Go look into their services and what they offer or their products. Make sure to subscribe to that YouTube and subscribe to your favorite listening stream app of choice, whatever it may be. With all that being said, one last word from Tice. The highly anticipated new season of Tice TV from the International Surfaces event is streaming in... Wow. When you try and modify it live, when you're reading from a page, it doesn't go so well. I'm sorry. Let's try this again. When will the highly anticipated new season of Tice TV from the International Surface event be streaming? It's streaming now. It's April and it's live. They are premiering their Spring Product Celebration Series. This season will deep dive into products and services from across the flooring, stone, and tile industry, featuring impressive brands such as Shaw, OneFloor, Laser Products, and more. The new season is being hosted by the iconic Lisbeth Calandrino, who has been captivating the industry and her audiences with eye-opening points, practical tips, and engaging personal stories through her industry experiences, books, and motivational speaking. Discover more at TiceTV.com and follow Tice TV on Facebook for live airing alerts. Matt, once again, thank you very much for your time, your words,
thank you.
Your insights. You're welcome, man. And I appreciate all of the listeners tuning in week after week for going on. It'll be 4 years in September. So we're at like 3.5 right now. So thank you, everybody, for the continued support. It means more than you know to me to know that everyone out there is listening and growing. And if it's changed your business, man, leave a review. Shoot me an email if you don't want to leave a review. Let me know. I love hearing stories. I love connecting with all of you because, honestly, it's kind of weird for me in that you all can come up to me at shows and you all know me very well because I share so much on this. And I know we're friends. We really are. But I don't know nearly as much about you as you know about me. And so it kind of like it's weird, but I want to know you. Like, come introduce yourself. Let me know what's going on and why, because I love having the conversations. And that's why I'm here, is I just love meeting people and having the conversations. So until next week, see you later. I won't lie, folks. I forgot to read a couple of reviews. So here they are. Dan O'Mashey from Australia. This is a great informative podcast that makes you realize that there is so much more to just providing a flooring service. With the highs and lows of challenges and rewards, learning from other people and building resilience in a tough trade, this is a no-brainer for me. Learn while you earn, right? Winky face. So thanks so much for the effort. Great job, guys. Matt 8761. If you're in the construction industry, this is a great listen. EB Hardwood. Every week, I look forward to hearing new material. Only 12 or 13 episodes in, and I'm hooked. As a floor installer myself, I'm always looking for ways to better myself and my business. It's awesome to hear tips and advice from some of the better installers in the game. Look forward to hearing more. Keep up the good work, Kyle. God Restored. While I'm traveling, I listen to the podcast. I'm in the flooring trade, and I love being connected to other tradesmen. Kyle chooses the right guests, and it's not only information, but entertaining as well. If you're in the flooring trade, give Floor Academy a listen and subscribe.